Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hey everybody, this is Phil Town.
And this is Danielle Town.
Welcome back. We're back talking about the Berkshire meeting because that is the Mecca, the church of value investing, and that's what we do. Rule one investing is don't lose money kind of investing, which means you basically put that first. That is your first thing to look at in any investment that you do, anything you're going to put your money into, is to look at that and say, okay, how can this thing burn me? How can this result in me losing money? And then like looking at a house in the, you know, in the neighborhood you live in, if assuming you're living in a good place, you like the town you live in, you look at that and you just go, okay, how am I paying a reasonable price here for this thing? Am I paying an attractive price? Because if I pay too much, I could not make enough money on this to make it worth doing the investment over time. And is it a solid house? Is it going to be solid for the next 20 years? Can I make a long-term projection here, maybe not on house prices, but certainly on rent, that it will continue to grow, you know, and I'll make a good investment. People do that all the time. It is not hard to do. Everybody can do that. And that's essentially buying real estate. Everybody buys a house. People can buy houses.
Love the sentiment. Can't let it go by.
Oh, dear.
It's terrifying to buy a house for many people, including me. So
it is a giant investment, and you're leveraging it to top it off.
For anyone listening who's like, what the heck? That was the most terrifying thing I've ever done. I'm with you. It's the most terrifying thing I've ever done. So don't listen to him.
Fair enough. I always like to put it in terms that people are already comfortable with, you know, and then all of a sudden you blow me up.
Yeah.
That this is the scariest thing on the planet.
No big deal.
Oh,
only the biggest amount of money you'll ever spend in your life.
That is true. Probably one of the biggest investments
for most of us.
Unless you do this kind of investing and get rich.
Unless you do this kind of investing and
then
get rich.
Then you'll be making other investments for sure. So we were talking about, the main points of the Berkshire meeting.
Yeah, and we ended talking about this great question from Daphne about inflation. And I just wanted to say that the reason it kind of frustrated me a little bit that they didn't really answer it, and you had a great point last time that often they do that when they don't want to share information, and looking at what they do is a lot more instructive than what they say. But what I wished, because it was such a good question, it was from such a young girl who was excited to be there, and I just wish that they had given her a real answer. And they have so, especially Buffett has written so much about how to find a great company in an inflationary environment. And I wish that he had talked about that a little bit, because I would have loved to hear that out of his mouth, not just from his letters, which is where he's written about it so much, but I would have loved to hear him talk about a company that can raise its prices with inflation and even beyond inflation, that has a really attached customer base that needs their product or their service, and that that is not going to be optional as people are starting to tighten their budgets.
I would have just loved to hear
more information about that from him. So that's why it bummed me out.
You totally nailed it. You just laid it out there. That's exactly what you're looking for.
You know what? I did the investing intensive. I read the letters and wrote about it for 6 months for the invested practice. So,
well, I think it's right on the money. You just absolutely pegged it. If you didn't get all that, rewind and listen to it, because it is exactly right. That is what Buffett would say if he decided to answer that question. I'm quite sure about that. But I'm going to take another side of that real briefly.
Go for it.
And that is, an inflationary environment One of the things he pointed out is having cash available. Of course, he's talking about Berkshire being the most responsible business in America kind of thing.
True.
But having cash is like oxygen. It's always needed.
Yes.
And essentially, there's...
He said it's always needed and you don't notice it until it's gone.
Until it's gone. And then he said that if we have a financial crisis like we had in the COVID drop or in 2008 where we had a freeze up, finance, then money is the only thing you need. There's no other currency that'll get you out. He's talking dollars, right? He's talking dollars. So I think that's a really important point, because if we've got inflation running at 7%, one of the biggest concerns people have is sitting in cash.
Yeah,
you're
true.
Getting 1% maybe now in a money market account, maybe, and you're sitting in cash and the cash is going backwards at a net minus 6% a year.
Yeah.
That ain't good.
No.
But you have to do it. You have to have the currency there when the economic storm hits. Because if you don't have it there before that, you're not going to be able to do anything when it happens. And this is how you end up with generational wealth or a real emotional moment, right? I mean, the market drops 50% and you didn't get out. Now you just have to wonder emotionally if it's ever going to go back in the next 20 years. But how much better is it to be sitting in cash? Even though you're looking at a cash negative against inflation, it's so much better both emotionally and financially to have cash available when you're coming into the teeth of a storm. And that's what we're doing. Now, the other side of this that Buffett just laid out there, which I thought was fascinating, is that don't bet against what the Federal Reserve might do in order to snap the markets up. You know, they start to see it start to sag, as we're starting to see with real estate, with mortgage rates at 5.5%, having doubled in the last few months. You know, what's going to happen to real estate and what's going to happen to the stock market? In 1981, they jumped in there. In 2008, they jumped in there. In 2020, they jumped in there. And what Powell's doing now is anticipating that the Federal Reserve needs to tighten, and they're tightening it. And they're trying not to throw us into a deep recession. The point being is that when it rains gold, you are not going to have a lot of time to take advantage of it. The Federal Reserve will move,
oh,
and they will
move
aggressively. They did so in 81, and they did so in 08, and they did so in 2020, and they're doing it faster all the time. 2020 was like, whoa.
It was unbelievably fast. Can we just pause on this for a moment?
Sure.
Because we've discussed this before, like quite a few times over the course of my investing education. And we've discussed a market drop and what to do and how quickly to act, you know, because I was like completely freaked out at the idea that I would have to know exactly the right time to do something. And what you had said to me several years ago before the COVID crash was it will take a long time. There will be... Sorry, my voice.
I was wrong about that, wasn't I?
No, I don't think you were actually wrong. I think the behavior of the Fed and the government was very different than it had been.
Yeah.
It was faster, as you just said. So that's a different thing than being wrong. That's new information. Okay, what am I trying to say? So what in that moment I was thinking, and we've talked about this, oh, I have time. Like, it's going to take a while.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think, interestingly, what you're saying now is kind of the opposite. And I just want to, like, make sure I'm clear on that.
Okay, so that when we're looking at entering the market during this economic storm, what's happening is that all of the businesses are going down, let's just say. So you have a watch list of 10 companies. And some of them are going down faster than others. Some of them were way overpriced and are going down, but they're not still near your margin of safety price. So the discipline is to buy in the margin of safety, right? What you want to do is you want to buy this company at half off of its intrinsic value. Mm-hmm. And so that's the discipline. The emotional side of this is that it's still going down. And so we all are a little bit looking to time the market. And I think Buffett pointed out pretty good that, you know, he's bad at that and got in 2008 instead of waiting for 2009. And he was 6 months early. But what he was doing was buying really good companies that were on sale, as far on sale enough, right? And then he also pointed out, by the way, at the weekend that if you've got to be able to be unemotional about the company going down a lot more, which can take us maybe next week to the Netflix situation, right? Where you have a wonderful business and it's going down, it shouldn't create an emotional problem. Just like if you buy a $10 bill for $5 and now you can buy the same $10 bill for $2, it shouldn't unduly upset you that you bought it for $5 because you got a fabulous deal. So that is to the point of your question and the issue. And that is, as this thing is going down, you've got to make sure you enter the market while it's in the margin of safety. And the way I do that personally is to take at least one quarter of the overall position I want when it gets into the margin of safety. All right, I'm going in for a chunk. Be sure. And then what I want to do is I want to continue to emotionally embrace the idea that this stock price is going down. Even though I own it at $5, I want to be emotionally connected to it, exciting that it's going down to $4 because I've still got money to spend. Yeah. And as it goes to four, I'm going to load up again. Okay, take another tranche, maybe two. But then I'm going to hold a fourth piece of the last quarter piece of what I want to put in. I'm going to hold on to that so I can continue feeling really good as this thing goes to three. You with me? And then now, because I don't know.
This is the slow drop scenario.
Yeah, the slow drop scenario.
Which did not happen.
No, and I got, I'm going to put this in perspective. This is great.
Okay.
I only got about half in because of this strategy in March of 2020. I only got about half in because I was waiting for the rest of it. And I have never seen the market turn around like it did. These things just shot up. And they really shot up out of the margin of safety. And I just thought, well, it's temporary or something, right? I don't have a crystal ball. I thought it would come back down again. Never seen anything like it. Despite the fact that I was still 25% in cash, from the bottom of the market in March of 20, when we stepped in until a year later, we're up 40% on the entire portfolio. So the whole, the impact of getting in a lot of money at the right time means you don't have to get in all of it. You just do your best to get in as much of it as you can. You're not going to do it perfectly. You're not going to be able to anticipate it. And Buffett would, and Munger would probably say, you screwed up by not buying enough. Well, I screwed up a lot less than they did. They didn't buy any. They were waiting. So Buffett is sitting here saying, I don't time the market. Excuse me. There was a bunch of stuff on sale right there, Warren. And you didn't pull the trigger.
In your opinion, maybe not in
100% in my opinion. And I can point to the companies he's bought since. And
at higher prices.
At higher prices. So fine, Warren, you don't time the market, but you just definitely were sitting there waiting.
My guess is that he was pretty busy on those days fielding calls from very worried friends saying, can you bail us out if we need you?
Absolutely probably right. He was sitting there realizing his requirement is going to be to have this giant cash hoard available if it's really necessary. And he didn't have a crystal ball. And so he had the cash hoard and it turned out to be not necessary and the thing shot up. And I don't, you know, Warren's never seen the federal government step in to save the day like that before either. It's always, you know, come down to him to a certain degree to save three or four companies.
And, and he actually has said that, I think last year he talked about that, that he was taking these phone calls and did not expect the government to act so quickly, and Berkshire ended up not being needed in the way that he expected.
And I got to believe that because he can move very, very fast. He just did move very, very fast. I mean, on February 26th, Buffett was talking about, there's no money to put to work. There's no opportunities. Literally 2 weeks later, he just bought billions of dollars of Occidental Petroleum. Yeah. So he's just like,
and Allegheny. He talked about that at the beginning, buying Allegheny out of the blue.
I mean, when the opportunity comes, you've got to be ready to pop it. And what he said to back that up is that the market can go from a casino, a gambling house, to an investing house so quickly. And he's saying that the market can do that more today than he's ever seen. And that was the reason he was able to get so much of Occidental and these oil companies, because the market was just volatile, and it would didn't matter that he was buying like a maniac, right? I mean, he's talking billions of dollars. That would normally just move that stock straight up, and he wouldn't be able to get a lot. But the market didn't care. It was just volatile. It was jumping around, and he was able to load up the truck, so he took advantage of it. So, yeah, I mean, you get a long-term view. You're looking at businesses that are wonderful, and when they fall into the margin of safety, you've got to buy them. And your biggest mistake is not getting the truck loaded up. You know, I wish I had loaded it up more. I always make those are my two big mistakes, by the way, for 40 years of investing. It's gone pretty well, is that I'll fail to get enough in the margin of safety because I'm protecting myself against the emotion of not wanting it to go down further. I always want it to go down further because I've got money to spend. And the other thing is on the other side of it, selling too soon. And this is where Buffett and Munger are better than me by a lot. And they're better than me at everything, but by a lot in this regard is they're just much more patient and willing to sit tight, right? And instead, when I buy something and a year later, it's twice as much that I paid for it, I'm much more like early Warren Buffett, you know, clearing it out, taking the profit, getting ready to move to something else. And, you know, later, wiser Warren Buffett and Charlie Munger are like, it works out pretty good to just sit tight. But here's the difference.
With certain companies, you know, they've got their sort of lifer companies.
Yeah.
But they have sold. They sell all the time.
Oh, they absolutely. And Buffett is one of the biggest options traders in the world. I mean, he's very much more active than he makes out. And you know, when you look at American Express, he's sitting on it for 40 years. 11% compounded, awesome. But in that same time period, Berkshire is at a 20% compounded rate of return. So really, if you look at American Express, you've got something that hasn't performed as well as the entire package. It's a part of it, but there's other parts that have done much, much, much better. So I think Buffett's point is, hey, we put the money in here and it sits tight. And it's all good, and it makes a 13% a year is nothing to laugh about. It's excellent return.
That's amazing.
But meanwhile, of course, by working at it, he's done much, much better. And I think all of us can do better too, like that.
I want to mention two things that I also found important before we maybe then you hit the high points. One is, since we were just talking about the speed that the Fed moved. Back in March 2020, Buffett recommended a book that he said was very good about that time, and it's called Trillion Dollar Triage. And he said it was a great overview of exactly what happened then. Trillion Dollar Triage. And then also, just because you were talking about cash and the importance of having cash when things start to crash, and Buffett and Munger both made I thought it was a really focused point that they talked about for a little while about what cash is to them. And Buffett said multiple times, it is not a money market account. It is only, to him, treasury bills. That's it. It has to be absolutely readily available. It can't be any commercial paper, can't be any money market account, because he doesn't know what's going to happen to those accounts as things start to melt down. So I thought that was a huge point that for those of us listening who are not as sophisticated as him necessarily, wondering what exactly cash is, it like in your savings account or like what does it mean? So to him, it means treasury bills.
Yeah, I think that's super important. We do government securities that are, you know, paying whatever they pay, but they're completely liquid and totally not leveraged and got the full faith of the U.S. government behind them because, you know, we have to deliver that cash. So, yeah, 100% cool. Let's see. Let's go through some more of these
things. Any other big points off your list?
Yeah, let's see. We talked about quite a lot of this already. I love this analogy. Treat ownership of a business like you just collected fine art. And I like that because last night I went over to a showing at a unique little gallery, and I'm going to say this guy's name's wrong. Basquiat?
Basquiat, yeah.
Basquiat, did I get it right?
Basquiat, a very famous artist.
Yeah, super, super famous artist. Well, this particular collector has been buying those paintings for years and sitting on them. He bought a couple of them for $30,000 that are now worth maybe $10 million,
yeah.
Right? So
I can imagine.
I think this is a great, I mean, this guy just sat on it. He said, I was laughing with him. He's about mid-40s, and he was just like, yeah, I hope, you know, my wife hopes someday that I'll actually sell some of these things, you know? So he's basically a collector of art. And I think Buffett's point is treat wonderful businesses like that. And this goes with what I was just saying. I sell too soon as a big flaw. And I shouldn't, because they don't come around every day that you can buy these wonderful things and hold on to them. And then I think if you're fairly wealthy, if you're listening to this podcast and you've got a good net worth and what you're trying to do is preserve it, then I think what Buffett's saying is really important for you. You're going to do the American Express thing that we've talked about before, which is, you know, fine, 11-13%, great, and just not do anything and just own that fine piece of art. If you're starting like I did with $1,000 and you got $10,000, you know, something like that, then you may want to consider when a thing gets, you know, well above its intrinsic value, then, you know, maybe you do want to move it out of and get something else. The problem with the way I do it is that new opportunities don't come along every day. You have to work hard. I work at this full time. If you're doing this at 15, 20 minutes a week, then sitting on pieces of art that you bought would be a really smart idea.
I get the feeling those opportunities used to come along more often.
I 100% agree.
There's the sort of standard, like, every 7 years or so, the market has at least a mini crash, if not a major one. And that obviously hasn't happened in the last, what are we at now, like 12 years? It's sort of a different situation now.
Yep. And I think as an investor, the hard part is, you know, as Buffett said in the meeting, you know, chapter 8 in The Intelligent Investor, which, by the way, if you haven't read, is required reading. You know, you when everybody else has seen a duck and you can see a rabbit and it's a rabbit, you're going to do real, real well. You know, if everybody else has just seen some angry drawings, but you see genius or you see the way the market's going, you're going to do really well. And I think the point there is that just because everybody else is going the other way doesn't mean you're wrong. And it really helps to understand why everybody else would be going the other way. And this is where you have a huge advantage as a small investor. No pension fund manager is looking over your shoulder saying, swing, you bum. We want to get in there and buy something. We're not paying you to sit there and wait for 2 years. Any idiot could do that. Well, we're the idiots that can do that. We're the ones that can just sit tight for 2 years or 3 years or whatever it takes until obviously wonderful businesses go on sale. And that's the key thing, you guys, is don't make it harder than it needs to be. Don't stress yourself. Don't strain trying to find stuff. Just wait. You know, look at the best companies in the world, the Costcos of the world, right? The fabulous companies, fabulously well run, and own them when they get cheap, and then just forget about it. You know, put them on your wall like a fine piece of art. I think that's super, super, super easy. And I think you can all do it. I think you can all do it. I think, and the big thing is you got to pull the trigger when it's time. And what that means is you don't have the luxury of figuring this out after the crash happens. You've got to do it now. If we're looking into the teeth of a recession.
Is that something he said or something you're saying?
No, that's something I'm saying.
I remember him saying that.
Well, actually, maybe that is something he was saying in a sense. You know, it's like basically toward the end of the meeting, he says, when opportunities arise, you got to be prepared to act. But you have to act big time. You got to go out with a bucket, not a thimble. And that means you have to be ready. And that's not just having your money ready. It's having your mind ready. Having understood the business well, having really grokked it, having gone deep into whatever else you're out there looking at, you know, and then you know that you're comfortable putting your, you know, a huge chunk of your life savings into this thing because it's a great piece of art. That's what I'd leave you guys with this episode. And I think that's the key to Buffett's success. So you can do it. It's just a matter of doing the work. If you pretend that you can do this without doing the work, you're going to have a rude surprise. When it comes time to actually pull the trigger, you're not going to be able to.
That's true.
Sit there.
I agree with that. Having done that.
I got to go.
Times now.
I got to run, honey.
Okay.
I do.
Thanks, everybody.
All right. I love you guys. Appreciate everything you're doing. Hi, guys. Thanks for listening to Invested. If you enjoyed this episode and you want more information or to listen to additional episodes, visit our website at investedpodcast.com and sign up for my virtual workshop right there. Spots are definitely limited for this event. I'm not kidding. They really are. They sell out very quickly. So everything discussed on this podcast, by the way, is either my opinion or it's Danielle's opinion. And it's really important, it's not to be taken as investing advice because I am not your financial advisor, nor have I considered your personal situation as your fiduciary. So remember that. You're on your own here. This podcast is for your entertainment and education only, and I really hope you enjoyed it.